Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is going to be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. We're going to be talking NFL draft. We'll be talking Cleveland Browns with Jeff Rich from Arizona via Ohio a little bit later in the show. Steve Leventhal will join us, and we'll be talking hockey and baseball and soccer with our professor of sports, John Poulter, a little bit later in the program. But let's start with the draft. The Bears in the recent NFL draft, they went defense in their first round with Leonard Floyd from Georgia at linebacker. And actually, the Bears had three fourth-round picks in the draft. So it went second-round Cody Whitehair from Kansas State, the guard. In the third round, Jonathan Bullard, the defensive end from Florida. The first pick of the fourth round, Nick Kwiatkowski from West Virginia, the linebacker. Then safety Deion Bush from Miami. And their third pick in the fourth round, DeAndre Hall, the defensive back from Northern Iowa. In the fifth round, they took Jordan Howard, the running back from Indiana. In the sixth round, DeAndre Houston Carson from William & Mary. He's a safety. And in the seventh round, Daniel Braverman, and he's a wide receiver from Western Michigan. For Green Bay, they went defense in their first round with Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle from UCLA. In the second round, Jason Spriggs, the tackle from Indiana. In the third round, Kyler Fockrell, linebacker from Utah State. In the fourth round, Blake Martinez, linebacker from Stanford. Their second pick in the fourth round, defensive end Dean Lowry from Northwestern. In the fifth round, Trevor Davis, the wide receiver from Cal. And in the sixth round, Kyle Murphy, tackle from Stanford. So now let's listen to Mike McCarthy, coach of the Packers, talk about the OTAs going on. Here's Mike McCarthy.
We look like a team that, you know, took the field for the second time. I think the positives of our football team, the conditioning, the strength levels, reflect where we thought we were coming out of the 5 weeks of the off-season program. So I'm impressed with the shape, good kind of shape our football team is in, and the way a number of the guys look and the way they're moving. So I think we're in very good shape, athletic, but. You know, those are the big things. If we're functional, we're probably, I would say we're a little further ahead than we've been in years past as far as what we've been able to install and where we are in those installations. So those are all good things. But I think the other part of it is, you know, all the little things aren't there. I mean, I think that's evident. So we have a lot of work to do, and you know, we look like a team that's practiced twice. So we're off to a solid start.
Coach Mike McCarthy of the Packers. Now Kyle Long, the offensive lineman for the Bears, talks about some of the transitions that have gone on with the Bears, losing some key veterans. Here's Kyle Long.
Obviously, missing Matt Slauson and missing you know, guys like Slauson and Forte, there's large voids to be filled, but this team has been built on horizontal leadership, and we've done a great job bringing in the right people. Defensively, offensively, and in the special teams unit. I love the coaches, I love the guys on this team, and I don't think that'll be an issue. So I don't really have to take on that much bigger of a role because of the guys that we have in our rooms. Everybody's kind of accountable to themselves.
All right, Locke coming back. We'll talk Cleveland Browns with Jeff Rich. Steve Leventhal from Chicago will join us later in the program. John Poulter from Toronto. So a lot coming down right here. Stick with us on the Weekend Sports Report.
Which
which way is the right way? I'm Danny Lipfrey with tips for today's homeowner. Everyone knows that ceiling fans help cool you down this time of year, but which way should they turn? Stay tuned and I'll give you the scoop, plus a few other tips to keep your cool right after this.
Step one, make a list of your weekend projects. Drywall, wash the patio, scrape the loose paint on the deck. Step two, pour yourself a cup of coffee.
Hey, Family Guy's on TV. Love that show.
Step three, 2 hours later, back to your list. Step four, pick a project, break out the tools, get it done. Step five, go ahead, one more episode. No guilt this time. Hyde Tools, everything you need to start somewhere at thehideway.com.
When a ceiling fan is operating in the cooling mode, you should be able to stand beneath it and see the fan blades moving in a counterclockwise direction. This forces air down onto us, making the room feel cooler than the thermometer actually says it is, much like the wind chill the weatherman talks about in the wintertime. To get maximum effect from a fan, it should hang as far down from the ceiling as possible so the airflow is less restricted. Fans with longer blades tend to move more air, but that more is better philosophy doesn't hold up when it comes to the number of blades or their width. Six-blade fans or those with large decorative blades actually move less air because there's less space between the blades to draw air through. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
This is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to visit InternetFM.com. This great site has online stations streaming rock music 24/7, hundreds of podcasts with on-demand music, sports, and talk programs. Also get daily features, music news, and useful links. Our radio stations have limited or no commercials at all. InternetFM.com. It's totally free. No sign-up required. If you love music, then InternetFM.com is for you. Also on Facebook at InternetFM.
You can't blame Henry because Hot Lips Houlihan can't stand her name.
She's regular army. She's a fanatic about ritual. She won't even let us play football.
Football? I didn't know you had a football team.
It's the Weekend Sports Report. Dave Rush joined by Steve Leventhal. And now we bring in from Arizona, by way of Ohio. He's from the Sports Byline USA radio network, Jeff Rich. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
All right. How about you, Steve? You think it's good to be here?
Well, yeah, since we don't do the show as much as we ought to, but hey, let's go for it.
We do it a lot in the football season.
That is true.
It's everything, the Some Weekends Sports Report.
Everything else is trivial.
It's like OTAs, right? Just once a month in the summer?
But in September, it's the Weekend Sports Report until usually the end of football season. Then it's kind of the monthly sports report. But we're enough about that. Jeff, the Cleveland Browns, you know, in the draft, the Browns had 15 picks. They had three picks in the third round, four fourth-round picks, and four fifth-round picks. I don't think a lot of people knew that. And so with all this young talent, I guess they're looking to get things going. What was your perception of their draft?
Well, first of all, they had to gut what hasn't been working. And if you've watched the Cleveland Browns for the last decade and a half, decade and three quarters, whatever, nothing's been working. So to keep the guys that helped you win three games, you know, to keep any of that nucleus together, aside from maybe Joe Thomas and Joe Hayden, nothing made sense. So they put all their wide receivers on notice by taking four of those, and they used back-to-back picks on day two to select defensive ends. So but you would think that those guys that remain on the roster have been put on notice. What's interesting to at least me is that they traded out of the spot where they could have gotten a quarterback. They haven't had the opportunity to take a quarterback near the top of the draft since they took Tim Couch in 1999. And they haven't had the opportunity really in a long time, because as bad as they've been, they've always managed to win four or five games, which keeps them away from the likes of Andrew Luck and Cam Newton.
I hear you. Okay, now Steve has raised his hand for a question. I am scared, but let's see what he has to ask.
Well, here, I was going to say, first of all, in the first round, your wide receiver, somebody I watched all season last year, absolutely dynamite, explosive wide receiver, playmaker. That
What's
was
his
a
name?
Good pickup.
What's his name?
Corey Coleman from Baylor.
All right, that's helpful, Steve.
Sorry. And Baylor is in the news. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the interwebs this morning, but you know, long going scandal. It was 50-50 whether Art Briles was going to keep his job there. In the end, that he did not, and Baylor has a major scandal on their hands.
What's the scandal?
The scandal itself is really kind of similar, but very different from the Penn State situation with Jerry Sandusky. I think that this is just kind of burying your head in the sand about how your players act off the field. And Jim Tressel learned that you can't do that. Joe Paterno learned that you can't do that. And now Art Briles is a former NCAA Division I head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation where you need to explain to your players they just cannot take liberties with women, and you cannot, sexual assault is a real thing, and you just can't do that, and the school cannot just cover it up.
Anything to win games. It's a big money business. At least Baylor got a new football stadium out of it.
Well, Corey Coleman, wide receiver, goes in the first round. The second round, a defensive end from Oklahoma State. Emmanuel Ogba, am I saying that right, Jeff?
Emmanuel Ogba. And then they follow that up by taking Carl Nassib out of Penn State. So I think that it's clear that Ray Horton wants guys that can get to the quarterback and put them on their butt, or force them to, you know, throw jump balls to the secondary and give the likes of Joe Hayden and really whatever else remains there in that secondary a chance to, you know, because they didn't really address that in the draft either. So they're going to be pretty thin at safety. They're going to be pretty thin at cornerback, as they have been in the last couple of years.
The other player that you drafted that I'm certainly been watched a lot is your quarterback, Cody Kessler, out of USC. Kid was a starter every year he played there. He's not going to throw any 60-yard bombs down the field, but he's very intelligent, decision-making, a great depth of field and vision, and he will probably, you know, given your weakness at quarterback, he probably has a shot.
And he's going to have a stable coaching situation, which is kind of funny. When you leave USC and you go to the Cleveland Browns, you don't really think that you're upgrading in coaching, but these aren't the Pete Carroll years anymore at Southern Cal. And he's gone through a couple of head coaches, the Orgeron debacle, the Kiffin debacle. Looks like Clay Helton had a good head on his shoulders, but he's going to play for a guy that specializes in helping quarterbacks. He's not really in the conversation with the depth chart, at least as it pertains to 2016. But there are going to be some guys that are under contract that get squeezed out. You figure between Josh McCown and Robert Griffin III, one of those guys stays, one of those guys goes. Everybody figures that though McCown is the incumbent, that it's Griffin's job to lose, and there's no reason to disagree with that. So Kessler's going to be kind of battling with Connor Shaw and Austin Davis towards the back end to be maybe that practice squad quarterback.
Okay, Jeff Rich with us from the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. You can hear him on Sunday mornings, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time at sportsbyline.com. And so overall, are you happy that they got Robert Griffin III?
You know what? I'd have to see him play. You know, you could throw against air all day long, and, you know, it's when you take those hits, do you get up from the hits? And at 26, he certainly has time to resurrect or revive his career. But if the knee's no good, the knee's no good. I mean, if the Browns signed on for damaged goods, then that's exactly what they're going to get. If they believe that he's healthy and he proves that he could stay healthy, I think that it's going to prove to be a worthwhile free agency signing, really a no-risk move in the long run.
All right, Jeff, let's move to the NBA now. The Cavaliers are in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're battling the Toronto Raptors. And once this airs Friday night, the Raptors play Cleveland in Toronto, and the Raptors are trying to force a game 7 in Cleveland. Your thoughts on this so far? And game 5 was a blowout in Cleveland, so the teams have both won on their home court only. And do you think they just wrap this up?
Well, there's a saying about the playoffs that no series starts until until one team wins on the other team's floor, and that hasn't happened yet in this Eastern Conference final. Toronto, you know, they really came to play. They had an emotionally charged game in Game 3, Game 4. They really opened up in the first half. They go up by 18. The Cavaliers come all the way back from it and just can't finish in the end. So You would think that the momentum's with Cleveland going into game six in Toronto, but you would have thought the same thing going into game three. So it's another one of those wait and see moments. But, you know, we're going to see how on the fly Tyrone Lue can coach this team and make adjustments, because Dwayne Casey at some points in the series appears to be out coaching him.
So, Jeff, how surprised are you, given their second best record in the NBA, that the Spurs got bounced out?
Very surprised. You know what? Oklahoma City, I think that they've kind of learned a lesson that teams that are there every year have kind of learned. And it's not to exert yourself in the first 82. It's not to show your hand. You get to these playoffs, you get to that second round, and, you know, I mean, you're dealing with the top three, top four teams in the conference. And I think that at the time it was more surprising, but, you know, now if you tell yourself this Oklahoma City team that is playing Golden State very tough, and, you know, if you'd have told, you know, that this team could beat San Antonio, it was harder to believe before it happened. But now that we have the hindsight of history, you know, and precedent and these games against Golden State and San Antonio, there's no surprise at all about Oklahoma City.
And if you're a Sports Illustrated reader, there is a really nice piece on Kevin Durant and just the revolution and the changes that have taken place in Oklahoma City since the team arrived.
There's not going to be a more open window. You know, the way that Steven Adams is playing, the way that Deion Waiters is playing, the way that, you know, the where Durant and Westbrook are in their careers, you could say that, you know, they might be at the peak of their prime. They might have another year to get there, but I don't think that there's ever been a more golden opportunity for Oklahoma City to win the title, you know, and ditto for Cleveland. But, you know, I don't want anybody to sell Oklahoma City short. That's a very good basketball team. You know, it's just that they lack a LeBron James and they weren't chasing history with the regular season record. Like, you know, I mean, even San Antonio was in that conversation for a while there. But, you know, everything changes when you get to April and May, and we've seen it play out like that.
So, Steve, you must have read the article. Tell us what it's about. What about Oklahoma City?
Well, like I said, it goes into details on how the city has changed, how the franchise being there has brought development downtown, how the team went out and, you know, upgraded their facilities. They used to practice in a roller rink, and something about being next to a processing plant that made it stink. And it was kind of a cool article, and it gave you a little bit of insight into Kevin Durant and his personality.
When are you going to upgrade your facilities?
When I get my multi-million-dollar contract.
Okay, that will be never. Okay, Jeff, go ahead. We'll wrap it up here in about a minute, but any last thoughts here?
Well, you know, to respond to all those nice things happening in Oklahoma City, it's happening at the expense of every NBA fan in the state of Washington. You know, don't forget that team, the team that drafted Kevin Durant, is the same team that's, you know, that's now playing on the godforsaken plain. So a lot at stake between Ohio and Oklahoma in the next couple months. You know, the Buckeyes go to Norman in September.
The godforsaken plains, you know, I don't think they supported him that much in Seattle, did they? Sonics?
The Sonics, yeah, you know what? I mean, as somebody that lost the Browns in 95, you know, that was kind of the heart and soul of the city. You know, remember, the Seahawks weren't really anything until, you know, 3-4 years ago. So that city has kind of suffered between the 2001 Mariners, you know, just making the playoffs. It's the last time that they've made the playoffs, by the way. And, you know, getting the Seahawks to be a good football team. You know, losing the Supersonics in 2008 was a big deal, and those fans are certainly rooting for the Golden State Warriors to make a comeback in this series.
Dave, I'll circle it back to NFL for you. What about the Raiders moving to Vegas? Is that going to happen?
Well, first, I wanted to say that nobody's cared about the Supersonics since Jack Sigma and Jenis Johnson. Okay.
Downtown Freddie Brown.
And the Raiders moving to Vegas, I think, would be a great idea. I read an article online where they said, well, Las Vegas is a small market of only 600,000 people. There's 2 million in the metro. Do your homework. So,
well, and you know, there's only 400,000 people in Oakland proper, too. So, I mean, even if they, you know, even if that was a small base and you were just going off of Vegas proper, I assume that when you talk about the metro, you're talking about Summerlin and Henderson and, you know, and all those communities that surround the city of Las Vegas, correct? Dave?
Mount Charleston.
Mount Charleston, where I spent several quality years back in the 90s. Anyway, I think it'd be a great idea for the Raiders to move to Vegas. Vegas deserves a team. They'd really support them, too. And it's not a long drive from L.A. and, you know, people coming in and out of there. I think it'd be a great idea. Well, Jeff, 11 o'clock Sunday, people should listen to you at sportsbyline.com, 11 a.m. You and the guys over there, we appreciate you coming on the program today. Any new things out there you would like to promote other than Sports Byline? Because I know
I talk about Cleveland quite a bit, both on Sports Byline and when you guys have me on here, and I do appreciate that. But I have a dedicated podcast to talking about all things Cleveland. It's called The Lay of the Land, and you can find it at foreverrebuilding.com.
Okay.
Sounds like the SRM business plan, Forever Rebuilding.
Forever Rebuilding. It's not a four and then ever. It's, you have to actually spell out forever.
Yeah. It's like a seven-letter word, but I'll help you out with it, Dave.
Rebuilding is where, put them two together. There's bound to be a mistake or two in there if I try.
You know, I'm from Cleveland. I've been reading that word for rebuilding since 1984.
All right, Jeff Rich, we will be joined by the professor of sports, John Poulter, when we come back on the Weekend Sports Report.
Who doesn't enjoy opening the windows and letting the warm breezes blow through your home? I'm Danny Lippard with tips for today's homeowner. If your screens are letting more than the fresh air into your home, stay tuned and we'll get that problem solved right after this.
Beautify your outdoor living spaces with Pavestone's elegant collection of pavers, retaining walls, patio stones, and edging. Pavestone's easy do-it-yourself products have a unique way of transforming landscapes into beautiful dreamscapes. Discover how you can enhance your outdoor living spaces with attractive and durable interlocking patio stones, driveway pavers, steps, retaining walls, pathway edging, fire pits, and planters by visiting pavestone.com.
Many people think repairing screens is a very tough job, but replacing a damaged screen can be done with just a few minutes and a few simple tools. A utility knife, a pair of pliers, and a special tool called a spline roller, which you can find at the home center for less than $10. First, remove the old screen by pulling out the spline, which is like a piece of rubber rope. Then spread out a roll of new screen material over the frame and cut it to overlap all sides by an inch or so. Then use the spline roller to force the old spline back into the track to lock the screen in place. Finally, when the spline is all in, you can trim off the excess screen with a utility knife, and you're done. I'm Danny Lippard with tips for today's homeowner.
Are you living with pain? I was, after a nasty fall. I got relief with 1 hour pain relief. I'm Barry Yarconi, president, and here's Lisa, a Marine who was injured in Iraq.
After surviving an explosion, I was on horrible painkillers for lingering head, shoulder, back, and knee pain, but I hated the dangers and side effects. My friend told me about 1 hour pain relief, and now I'm off the drugs.
1 hour pain relief is the result of 15 years of research on an amazing extract from hops, the plant used to flavor beer.
Whether your pain is from an injury or just aging, you get safe, all-day relief in less than 1 hour.
We're so sure you'll love 1 hour pain relief, too, that we'll send you a one-week trial for just a small shipping charge. Call 800-269-9500 right now. That's 800-269-9500. There's no gimmicks, no obligation, no automatic shipments. Stop living with pain. Call 800-269-9500 for your one-week trial or visit onehourpainrelief.com. That's 800-269-9500.
Dave here. I want to tell you about some good online music stations. If you like to listen to your music online, softhits.net. Our friends over there play Elton John, Tina Turner, James Taylor, Carly Simon, Billy Joel, Mariah Carey, Backstreet Boys at softhits.net. Also, zcomradio.com. That's zcomradio.com. They have two stations. On Gems, they play Ricky Nelson, Herman's Hermits, Pat Boone, Buddy Holly, Fats Domino. And their other station, The Choice, that's a rocker playing Boston, Aerosmith, The Doobie Brothers, Stones, Beatles, Peter Frampton. And then MileHighRadio.com. They will play Dan Fogelberg, The Band, Poco, The Eagles, The Outlaws, John Denver at milehighradio.com. Some good stations for listening to music online.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and medical expenses are covered. If you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over 60, call 24/7 1-800-249-0215. 1-800-249-0215. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Let's play it smart out there tonight. I want to see a lot of work from you guys. Put your heads on the ice out there. Guys, we all know how to play hockey. Just play it smart.
That's right.
Hey, Packer Dave, this is Bob Uecker, Mr. Baseball. And, you know, when we think of cheeseheads in Wisconsin, your name immediately comes to mind. Not only cheesehead, but curdle cheese. When they talk about curdle cheese, letting it go sour, it's you, Dave. And we thank you for that, Packer Dave.
I love Bob Uecker. You know, I used to listen to him in 1972 in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, in the basement. You know, in my small, that, you know, clock radio with the digits that would flip.
What else were you doing in the basement?
None of your business, Steve.
I'll bet.
I was only 10, all right?
Hey, some people start early.
Okay, it is the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Dave Rush. He's Steve Leventhal. And we are going to be talking some baseball here in just a bit, but we're going to start with hockey and bring out the professor of sports from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, John Poulter. And actually, before we get to hockey, John, the Raptors are getting pretty far in the NBA, so we have to say we're proud of them, no matter what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting last couple of games in that series. Every time they go to Cleveland, it seems they lay a huge egg, so we'll have to see what's going to transpire in the rest of that series.
Okay, well, let's move on to hockey. The Sharks move on to the finals. So you and Steve can take it from here, but let's discuss San Jose.
Well, I think San Jose has been a sort of a borderline team for a number of years. They've had that reputation of being a great regular season team, not doing very well in the playoffs, often coughing up 3-0, 3-1 leads in terms of seven-game series. So this year has been a little bit different for the Sharks, but they've been dominant in most of the games that I've seen. They've certainly been dominant in the St. Louis series, wrapping that one up in six games. They were very good value for their money as far as I was concerned. They beat St. Louis at their own game, along the boards, in front of the net, physical game, good goaltending, good scoring. I just don't think St. Louis were in the same class, and it's kind of nice to see San Jose finally come through after all of these years of promise and finally making their first ever franchise Stanley Cup appearance.
So, John, were you surprised at the early demise of the Blackhawks, their quick exit from the playoffs?
I was and I wasn't, Steve. We all know that that division in the Western Conference is probably the strongest of the four divisions. Whoever the Blackhawks drew in the first round, you knew that they were going to draw a strong team, whether it was St. Louis, Dallas, Minnesota, Los Angeles, Anaheim, or San Jose. Name the team from the Western Conference that the Blackhawks could have come up against, and you knew it was going to be a tough road to hoe. And certainly in terms of the Blackhawks' talent, they've had an odd year. I think for a lot of the year, they sort of hid behind the great goaltending of Crawford. And it was a bit of a surprise and a disappointment to me that he wasn't named one of the finalists for the Vezina Trophy, because quite frankly, I thought for quite some time Crawford kept the Hawks alive for some stretches this year. And that seven-game series with St. Louis might be the best seven-game hockey series we have seen in a few years and may well see in the next few years, because that was seven good games. If that had been a best of 11, I think it probably would have gone to 11 games. That's how close those two teams were.
Kind of like the old days of baseball. I think they used to play best of nine back in the turn of the century, the 19th century, or that is, 20th century.
Yeah, that's a long time before you and I were baseball fans. the best we remember is a best of seven. But I understand that back in the early 1900s, in the first 4 or 5 years of the World Series, which I believe started in 1903, they were playing best of nine series. Of course, the regular season was shorter, so they certainly weren't playing any longer into the fall than they are now. But best of nine, maybe a little bit too long.
So since you sort of mentioned baseball, why don't we segue into that? And just let's talk broad brushstrokes in terms of surprises this year, certain demises or current demises, as in the case of the Chicago White Sox. What are your observations of the baseball season so far?
Well, I guess if you want to look at pleasant surprises, I'd have to say that the White Sox were a pleasant surprise. I'm beginning to think that they might be coming back to the pack. I think they're on a streak right now where they've lost 7 out of 10. They've now got to the point where the Indians are pushing them big time, and I believe the Indians were into whatever they call White Sox Park these days, U.S. Cellular Field, I guess, and took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox and did it relatively easily from the highlights that that I have seen. Chris Sale, great start for a guy that's been a great pitcher for a number of years, has probably never got the recognition that he deserved. He's been a loyal soldier to the White Sox. It's nice to see him come around and get some credit, but of course he's doing that at the same time that Jake Arrieta right across town is pitching lights out and has been for quite some time. So even though Sale is 9-1 and we're not even at Memorial Day, he's got to take second seat to a guy on the Cubs. So the White Sox starting to come back a little bit. I think Seattle's been a pleasant surprise, specifically on the road. I believe they have the best road record in Major League Baseball. Got to be some disappointments. A little bit disappointed in the Cardinals. We talk about the division that the Blackhawks are in the NHL. I think we could probably say that the National League Central in Major League Baseball is probably just as good a division in terms of it has three really strong teams in St. Louis, Pittsburgh, and the Chicago Cubs. St. Louis has not been playing that badly, but the last time I looked, this really surprised me, was that St. Louis was last in overall defense in the major leagues. And that's not something you expect from a Cardinal team that generally is a well-schooled team and generally plays a pretty solid fundamental baseball game. I don't think the Cardinals are out of it yet by any stretch of the imagination, and certainly the Pirates are not out of it by any stretch of the imagination because they're in second place, whereas the Cardinals are third. But the Cubs have certainly lived up to their promise and their hype, have come out of spring training doing very, very well, have been scoring an awful lot of runs. You know, we're not quite at Memorial Day yet, and I generally don't take the baseball standings too seriously in terms of games behind until we see the calendar click from May to June. So we're a few days away from that, but certainly the Cubs have been I won't say a pleasant surprise because I think everybody anticipated that they would do well. I guess the surprise has been that they have actually lived up to expectations. Looking at the National League West.
How about San Francisco right now, the hottest team in baseball?
That's exactly what I was going to talk about. I've said for a few weeks now when people have asked me, what was it going to take for the National League West to develop a front runner? And I think my comment was that somebody needed to go on a 10 of 12, 15 of 20, 20 of 25 run. And lo and behold, that's exactly what the Giants have done. At the end of April, I believe they were 12-13, and I think they've won 13 of their last 14 and probably 16 out of their last 20 or 21. So that's exactly what they've done, and they're doing it with pitching. And Bumgarner, I guess, has turned the corner after having a relatively slow start. Dodgers are hanging in there. I just do not understand why the Dodgers are a 500 ball club. To me, they're a heck of a lot more talented than that on paper. The surprise in that division might actually be Colorado, who on the weekend were 21-21 and sitting in second place. The Dodgers have subsequently caught and passed them because Colorado has been on a little bit of a losing streak. But the National League West, I still think it's a two-horse race. I still think it's the Giants and the Dodgers, and I still think that the Giants have got the leg up there. And, you know, if you want to swing over to the American League East, I guess the Toronto Blue Jays are a disappointment. Sitting in last place as we speak, the big issue there is they haven't been scoring an awful lot of runs. Their bats have been silent. They're 4-10 in one-run games. You flip that around and make them 10-4. Guess what? They're in first place because Boston is leading the division as we speak with 29-17 as their record. You give the Blue Jays an extra 6 or 7 wins, and they're right in there with the Red Sox. So that division is a little bit upside down from what I expected. But, you know, it's early days yet, and as we often say, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, so there's lots of time left. And, you know, I guess the one huge disappointment or surprise to me has been the lackluster play of the Houston Astros. They're 9 or 10 games out as we speak. I had them pegged for the World Series, and they just don't seem to have been able to get it going. And I thought that was a good team last year. I thought it strengthened itself over the winter. And here they are in last place, even behind Oakland, in a division that, to me, is still there for the taking, notwithstanding the way that Seattle has come out of the gate.
Well, yeah, look at all the draft choices, high draft choices that Houston has had, and all the top draft choices that the Cubs have had. Obviously, they've done a lot better with what they've chosen.
Well, both teams have drafted well, and they've been smart enough to hang on to those young players. And, you know, I'm thinking of guys like Carlos Correa, Altuve, and, you know, and in terms of the Cubs, you could name half a dozen guys that they've drafted young, and they've developed, and they've had the patience with. And the Cubs have had the budget to supplement that with the Jason Haywoods and the John Lesters, and so on and so forth. So Cubs probably a little bit better healed in terms of being able to supplement those draft choices. I think the Astros are primarily a draft and develop team, and so far it's been working out for them. I'm starting to wonder now if maybe they overachieved a little bit last year, and perhaps they were teasing us a little bit in terms of where they could go. I really thought they'd be a better team in 2016 than we've seen to date, but you know, again, it's early. Let's not count them out.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump over to soccer real quick before Dave gets the itchy trigger finger. And before we even talk about the Copa America, which is coming here to the States, let me just tell you personally, I just came back from a trip to Europe, and part of it was I was able to take a tour of the Bernabeu Stadium in Madrid, where Real Madrid plays. And let me tell you, what a place, that whole stadium.
I've never been there. I've talked to several people that have, and of course, growing up in England, it was a storied stadium that we used to hear about quite often. I think the capacity is about 104,000, which would make it comparable to the Michigan football stadium in Ann Arbor. So we're talking about a huge stadium. We're talking about a team that's revered in its city, probably is as big or perhaps bigger in Spain and Madrid than the Yankees are in New York. That's sort of how we would have to look at Real Madrid. They've never had an issue with getting the checkbook out to sign star players, be they young stars, mature stars, current stars. They've always been able to get out the checkbook. But when you're playing to 104,000 people every day, and you've got huge TV contracts and sponsorships and all of that kind of stuff, it's not hard to see why they have been so successful. But I have been to Old Trafford, which seats 76,000. It's the biggest club stadium in England. But, you know, there you're looking at the Bernabeu is half as big again. So that must have been quite an experience visiting there.
It was a lot of fun. It was a great self-guided tour. One of the most impressive things of all, not the pitch, not the locker rooms, not the cushy president's box seats. Their trophy case is unbelievable. They have 5 trophy cases, and they are the size of a car dealership. It's just trophy after trophy after trophy, whether it's the Spanish League, the Copa del Rey, their UEFA, their European Championships. They even played in the World Club Championship. They have just an unbelievable trophy case.
Yeah, well, Manchester United has a great trophy case as well, but their situation is a little different because, A, they haven't won the European Cup or what's now the Champions League as many times as Real Madrid have. I mean, in the late 50s and the early 60s, Real Madrid pretty much owned that competition. And the other reason that Real Madrid has as many trophies as they do is that for many, many years, they were the dominant team in Europe. And it's starting to get that way a little bit now in the English league, where we've got four or five teams that are dominant all the time. But for years, we looked at countries like Spain, Italy, Portugal, France, where there were one or two teams that were extremely dominant. In Portugal, it was Benfica and Sporting Club of Portugal, also known as Sporting Lisbon. In Spain, we had Real Madrid, we had Barcelona, we had Atletico Madrid. In Italy, you had Juventus, the two Milan teams, and so on and so forth. So it was a lot easier for those teams to garner those trophies. So I don't want to downplay the number of trophies that Real Madrid has won and say that, you know, it's unfair. That's not true. They were dominant in their country and they deserve those trophies, but it is a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison, even if you compare it to countries like Germany, where there's always been five or six very strong teams in the Bundesliga that have shared those trophies, even though Bayern Munich has been a very strong player in that league for many, many years. Real Madrid, certainly one of Europe's most dominant clubs, overshadowed a little bit in the last decade by Barcelona, specifically since the Messi era started, but just an unbelievable club. Must have been one heck of an experience to have a tour of a stadium like that. I'm somewhat jealous.
All right, and lastly, before we cut loose here, I will tell our listeners, and hopefully you'll get a chance to maybe see some of this, the Copa America, it's the 100th anniversary. I think it's the oldest club country tournament in the world, is coming to the United States. It's normally played in South America, and their best teams are coming here. The best players in the world are coming here. Lionel Messi, who you talked about from Barcelona, Chicharito, a Mexican star. Of course, Team America is going to be there. It starts on June the 3rd, and there will be a match here in Chicago as well, where the United States will be playing their CONCACAF nemesis, Costa Rica. All right, Dave, what do you think?
Well, I just, a great segment, guys, and good information as always, John. John, do you get the impression that Steve wants everybody to know he's like a world traveler and goes to all these exotic cities and foreign countries?
Hey, if you've been there, tell everybody about it. That's the way I look at it.
All right. We're so proud of you. We're so proud of you for getting out of Lake Bluff, Steve.
Well, I'll let our great listeners live vicariously through us. You take Packer Dave, your life's pretty fun too. You travel to Arizona, you go to Canada,
Wisconsin. I go to Wisconsin a lot. And that's very exciting.
Oh, that's
John,
living.
Have you ever wanted to travel to Wisconsin? And more specifically, say, you know, like Sheboygan or Manitowoc? It's a lot of stuff to do.
Well, I guess there is. I got to be honest that's never really moved the needle very much as far as I'm concerned.
All right,
concerned.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, John.
If I was going to Wisconsin, I think my pilgrimage would probably be to Lambeau Field, and that would be a very important trip. I'm not a Packer fan, but a lot of history in that field, as you know, Dave, from growing up in that area.
Ooh,
that, to me, would be the trip to Wisconsin.
What about the Johnsonville Bratwurst Factory?
Sauerkraut Festival, the
what
Cheese
about that,
Met Castle.
I could probably take a pass on that one, guys.
Actually, you know the best thing to go up there is to go to Summerfest in Milwaukee. That's living.
Door County's pretty nice, too. Well, John, thanks very much. We will do it again the next time we do this thing. We have no idea when that is. Okay.
That's my pleasure as always, guys. Take care.
All right, John Poulter, the professor of sports from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Weekend Sports Report. Remember, you can get the Weekend Sports Report at internetfm.com. That's internetfm.com. And it also a real easy place to find us, PackerDaveShow.com. PackerDaveShow.com. You can also hear this on iTunes, and you can get us at TuneIn.com. A lot of places to get the show. Or you can just do a Google search for Weekend Sports Report.
Why?
And get us. You know, we're really intense during the NFL season. This is our off season, so you get about once each month. But come NFL, come later part of August, we're going to be ramping it up. So stay tuned for that. For Steve Leventhal, I'm Packer Dave, saying thanks a lot for listening. Have a great day. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye.
Get the bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.
When you take a deep breath, are you sure you're breathing in fresh air? I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. In just a moment, we'll talk about a dirty little problem and how you can fix it right after this.
There are things that a door or window screen will always do. Keep the bugs out, let the fresh air in, fit with your home in style. But they'll also be there all the time, even when you don't want them. So what if it doesn't always have to be that way? Retractable screens by Phantom disappear completely out of sight when not in use and pull into place only when you need them. Don't let your screens get in your way. Experience screens that disappear. Experience Phantom screens.
As the summer heats up, our air conditioners start working overtime. We all know it's important to keep the filter changed, but you also need to keep the evaporative coil clean as well. A dirty coil promotes mold growth, which can find its way into the very air we breathe inside our homes. It can also cause your unit to work a lot less efficient and even freeze up. Over-the-counter spray cleaners are okay for very light cleaning, but in many cases, the coil needs to be removed for cleaning. That's when you need to call in the professionals. A thorough cleaning of the coil will improve the peak operating efficiency of the unit and will help extend the life of the equipment. In the long run, it saves you money, and that definitely will help you breathe a healthy sigh of relief. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, and I would like to invite you to check out Baseball Voices, the Hall of Fame series. These commemorative audio tributes celebrate the greatest baseball announcers of all time. Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Harry Callis, Marty Brenneman, Red Barber, Milo Hamilton, and Dave Niehaus. These CDs are a collection of highlights, history, humorous stories, and Hall of Fame speeches. Available now at baseballvoices.com. That's baseballvoices.com.